I recently read in a book called Transcending the Sexism in Biblical Texts, where Carol Ox and Rabbi Carrie M. Olitsky wrote as follows. Over the past generation, we have all been made aware that the Bible presents an overwhelmingly male-dominated view of the world. Not only is the biblical text restricted almost entirely to the history of men, it records that history from what we would describe today as a male point of view. Women, when they are mentioned at all, are typically cast as bit players in the larger drama. In recent years, theologians and scholars have striven to identify the various obscuring layers that hide the role of women in the biblical narrative. There is now an extensive and growing literature that brings the invisible women of the Jewish tradition into the spotlight and puts their stories into a broader perspective. Recent feminist scholarship, they say, has helped, for example, to restore Miriam to her central role in the Passover story and in the celebration of the Seder. It is going to be our goal today to look at the life of Miriam and suggest that her holiness is in fact something which is unquestionable, her role certainly essential, and to do away with the myth that Jewish tradition does not value the roles that women played in Yetzias Mitzrayim. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, the Chief Rabbi of England, has pointed out that though Moshe Rabbeinu was the central figure in the drama of the Exodus, there is a striking emphasis on the roles of six women, without whom there would not have been a Moses. There is Yocheved, Moshe's mother, who had the courage to have a child at a time when all male Israelite children faced death. There is Miriam, Moshe's sister, who we'll return to later, as we mentioned. There are Shifra and Puah, the two midwives, if they are seen as people who are different from Yocheved and Miriam, who defy Pharaoh's decree of genocide. There is Zipporah, Moshe's Midianite wife, who accompanies him on his mission and at one stage saves his life. And then there's Pharaoh's daughter, who rescues Moshe and adopts him, knowing that in doing so she is acting against the will of her father. All of these women reveal moral courage that the two, especially Tzipora and Pharaoh's daughter, aren't even Jewish at the time, which is clearly an indication of the fact that women recognize the sanctity of life, and as Rabbi Sacks says, that they refuse to obey orders that desecrated life. It is the women who are fearing God, who are fearless in the face of human evil, he says. I would add resoundingly to Rabbi Sacks' examples that Chazal tell us, as is well known, Mishum Nashim Sikaniyot Nigalu Avotenu Mimitzrayim, that it is due to righteous women that our ancestors were redeemed from Egypt. There is absolutely no effort to hide anything here. They say it as clear as it could possibly be said. As for Miriam, I would like to offer a theory that her life is presented as essentially parallel to that of Moshe Rabbeinu in numerous ways, and I will suggest those ways. First, Moshe's name relates to water. As Pharaoh's daughter says, Kimin Hamayim Mishituhu, because I drew him out of the water. And in fact, we shall see that many seminal events in the life of Moshe Rabbeinu revolve around water. Miriam's name contains the letters for water, Mayim, in it. And it may be translated as bitter sea, or bitter waters. More on that later. Second, Moshe, we know, floated down the Nile. Miriam also traveled down the Nile, looking after him. Third, Moshe contravened Pharaoh's command by saving a Jew who was being beaten by an Egyptian. Miriam, according to the view of Chazal, that she was Puah, contravened Pharaoh's command as well by saving Jewish children and not drowning them in the waters of the Nile. Fourth, Moshe meets his future wife and partner at a well, the well of Midian. Due to the merit of Miriam, we know the Jewish people are granted a miraculous well that accompanies them throughout their journey in the deserts. When Miriam dies, the well ceases to exist. Fifth, again, we're still seeing the relationship that both these characters have to water. Moshe splits the waters of the sea and leads the Jewish people in a song that glorifies the miracle that the Almighty had done for them. Miriam leads the women in song at the sea. The Malbim comments that it is specifically because of the central role that she and all women played in the redemption, that they merited to sing their song independently from the entire people. The Michilta asks, it says that they sang with their timbrels and tambourines. Where did they get these instruments from? And it answers that even as slaves in Egypt, the women knew that one day there would be a redemption. And therefore they made these instruments even as they were enslaved in expectation of that day. Sixth, Moshe received the Torah symbolized by water, a vital element for all life. Just as water always flows down, we are told, to a lower source, so too Torah always flows down to a humble source. And Moshe taught this essential element of life, Torah, to Klal Yisrael. The Medrash says that the Aron HaKodesh that would protect the Torah was due to the merit of Miriam, who as a child had protected and watched over Moshe Rabbeinu, who would receive that Torah. And as Moshe taught Torah to the men, Chazal say, it was Miriam who taught Torah to the women. Seventh, Moshe Rabbeinu's new sin that condemns him to die before entering Eretz Yisrael occurs when Miriam's well disappears. It involves water. And while there are so many suggestions among the commentators about what his sin was, it is generally understood that he was supposed to speak to the rock, as Rashi says, in order to get the water. But instead, he hit the rock. Isn't it interesting, though? Let us remember that after he split the sea and the people needed water, Moshe was told at that time to hit the rock, not to speak to it, but to hit it. Does this not make his error more comprehensible to us? Now let us look at Miriam's major sin. Miriam, we know, spoke inappropriately about Moshe. Moshe had separated himself from his wife so he could constantly focus on God, as we are told at the end of Parshat Bahalotcha. Miriam confronted him and told him this was improper. God intervened and rebuked Miriam for speaking in such a fashion to Moshe. How was it possible that Miriam could speak in this way to Moshe Rabbeinu, the God El Ador? But remember, when Amram and Yocheved, her parents, had separated from each other and decided to have no more children because Paro had declared that they'd be drowned in the Nile, Miriam then too confronted her parents and told them they were wrong for separating, and even prophesied that they would give birth to the Redeemer, and she was right. So when Moshe separated himself from his wife, for other reasons, to be sure, should we not understand, though, that Miriam would rebuke her brother, the leader of the generation, as she did, and correctly so, her father, who was the leader of the generation? Is her mistake like that of Moshe's not more comprehensible in that light? And finally, the eighth item. Our tradition describes the death of Moshe Rabbeinu as being the death of a kiss, of being an experience of pleasure. And so too, our tradition says, does Miriam die in this fashion? So Miriam's life, to a great degree, was not only significant in the history of her people, but as I have tried to indicate, it is greatly modeled after the life of Moshe Rabbeinu, which makes a tremendous statement about who Miriam was. The one bothersome item here is in their names. The Sforno says that as Moshe means drawn from the water, it yet implied as well that he would draw out others from their troubles. He would draw out and lead the Jewish people out of Egypt. But Miriam, meaning bitter sea or bitter waters, why was she deserving of such a name? There is a Medrash that comments that when Miriam was born, that was the day that Pharaoh began to intensify the suffering of the Jewish people, so she was called Miriam, recalling that bitter national event. But there may be another reason why she is called that name as well, and perhaps this reason does not contradict the previous one. It is interesting we are not told Miriam's name at the time of her birth. We are not told her name when she watches over Moshe. We are told her name for the first time after the crossing of the sea, when she leads the Jewish people in song. My daughter Shoshana pointed out to me that the Or Gedaliahu quotes a Medrash that says, until the Jewish people sang this Shira, this song of the sea, no human being had ever sung Shira to Hashem before. And many find this Medrash difficult, he points out, because Adam HaRishon, the very first human being, sang Shira to Hashem. According to your tradition, he sang Lechuna Ranana Hashem Nari Alitzur Yishenu, that we sing on Friday night. And after he repented from his sin, he sang Mizmor Shir L'Yom HaShabbat, a special song for Shabbos. Tov L'Hodot Hashem U'Lezamer L'Shimcha L'Yom. So how could the Medrash say that no human being had ever offered Shira to the Ribono Shel Olam before? The Or Gedaliahu suggests, in accordance with the insights of the Beit HaLevi, that this was the first time that song was ever offered not only for the good, for the miracle, for the salvation that had occurred, but also for the suffering that had been endured. In his words, this was a shira both on the geula, the redemption, but also on the galut and the enslavement that the Jewish people had now recognized that even the difficult times they had experienced were necessary and divinely ordained, just as much as the miracle of the splitting of the sea. It would even make sense, suggests Rabbi Shaya Koenigsberg, my daughter's teacher at MMY, that Miriam, who is called by her name the first time at the sea, is called such because she envisioned the redemption from the very beginning, even in the midst of the slavery, when everyone else thought that there was no hope. She is therefore called Miriam because she sees the bitterness standing at the sea as necessary, somehow in the divine scheme of things, more than all the others, perhaps, who sang that song. This is Miriam. This is what her name conveys. This is the aspect of Kedusha that she brought to the world. And clearly, it is emphasized by Chazal, by our sources, despite what the feminists we have quoted have said. We have all gone through bitter times in our lives. For many of us, we have gone through them, and we are still going through them. Each of us with our own challenges, which no one else can really understand, which of course makes it all the more difficult. To be able to sing to Hashem in the midst of the bitterness, this is an incredible gift. But it is a gift that some people are blessed with. I don't know if it can be expected of all of us, but we can learn from Miriam that when we have emerged from the bitterness, from the suffering, we must then at least, if we could not do it prior to that point, try to find some meaning in the bitterness, to learn something from the fact that it happened as it did, whatever it was that brought difficulty to our lives, in an effort to recognize some message that was meant for us so that we might be able to sing Shira to Hashem, even putting us through that. Is this something that is easy? Not at all.
Can it be done, though? Miriam did it. And since that time, Klal Yisrael, with all of its collective suffering, has learned to do it as well. I once read a statement by a writer, Lynn Peters, who said the following: happiness and satisfaction isn't about what happens to us. It's about how we perceive what happens to us. It's the knack of finding a positive for every negative and viewing a setback as a challenge. If we can just stop wishing for what we don't have and start enjoying what we do have, our lives can be richer, more fulfilled, and happier. That time is now. May the example of the life of Miriam and the essential role that she played and that is indicated by our tradition continue to inspire us when we read of the narrative of the redemption from Egypt, so that we may find meaning in our personal lives, even in that which is bitter, even in the suffering, as Miriam did in the celebration of Pesach and our redemption.